WSJU Radio, St. John's University Sports and Hip Hop with DJ Mad Max. We have a special guest here on the Zoom call, Chris Carlin, the one and only. Chris Carlin, how you doing today?
I'm great, Max. What's going on, man?
Not much. It's an honor to have you here. Longtime listener, listened to you on The Fan for many years, and now you're on ESPN Radio. And how was that transition? Because I know it was an honor for you to be on The Fan at a time, but now you're on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was, you know, bumps in the road in your career, things that happen.
Yeah.
But ESPN's been absolutely phenomenal. You know, the day that I got cut loose by The Fan last year, they called within minutes. And, you know, they were fantastic from the get-go. It's been an absolute blast working there. And, you know, it's been fun. It's been different. Doing a solo show is something that I haven't done in a while, so... I've enjoyed it. It's been really good.
Mm-hmm. What's something that ESPN Radio has done better in your eyes than The Fan?
You know, I don't know if it's better. I think it's just the thing that I think we see is that there is a tremendous unity among all of the shows. Everybody supports one another and all that. And not to say that wasn't the case at the other place, but I just think that, it's more of a situation here where, you know, Michael, Don, and Peter will have me on the end of the Michael K show to kind of promote what I'm doing. You know, they talk about other shows all day long. You know, there is that sense of not just being buried in what you're doing. And I've been guilty of that plenty of times in my career. And it's really made me appreciate that more. You know, the idea that you want to support everybody else on your station and making that a priority and not just worrying about what you're doing all the time. So I think that's been something that's been absolutely great.
That's something that's interesting. And I look at that as something in radio. Could it be an issue? Because at our station at St. John's University, a lot of the hosts get along, but there's tension between the hosts too. And that's something that I always wondered about in radio, because if you listen to The Fan, you'll hear that people didn't get along with Mike.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know, Mike is Mike. Mike's going to do his thing. I cannot ever deny the career or the impact on my career that Mike had. It's been absolutely amazing. And so from that standpoint, I think it's not something that I really even worry about that much. It's one of those things now where, I don't know, I just think that it's just made me appreciate everything that I have a little bit more. And you can't control what other people are going to do and what they think. All you can control, that's the big one that I've really learned. I know it sounds cliche, but you do, when you finally realize that, you kind of get a feeling of a little bit of helplessness, but at the same time, once you embrace it, it's freeing. And that's kind of what I've been able to do here.
Mm-hmm. Something that I loved about your theme song when you're on The Fan, I think it was the best theme song because you had Still Dre and then you had G Money saying CMB, Cash Money Brothers from New Jack City.
That one was Bart's idea. That was Bart's idea. And it was, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I would have even, like, Still is one of my favorite songs, and I absolutely would have used it here, but I, you know, you want to do something different. Obviously you want to set it up a little bit differently than it was before. So, but yeah, I absolutely loved it. I've been kicking around, like, changing it up, and I don't know what I'm going to go to, right now. I'm kind of still thinking about what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about hip hop on your show. You've talked about Lil Wayne's album. I remember when he dropped the Carter Five, I think that did come up on your show once. Who are your top five hip hop artists?
Oh man. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, I know hip hop. it's funny. Like, I'll give you just a weird example. Okay. I don't know if this qualifies or not technically, because I am that much of a dork, but like is Mac Miller,
he counts.
I mean, yeah. You know, so Mac, like, years ago, and I didn't even know this at the time, right? I was doing Rutgers basketball, and I was on a plane back from Pittsburgh. This is probably 2010. And I'm sitting at the gate And two or three people are coming up to this guy and asking him, like, hey, can I get your autograph? Can I get a picture? And I just had no idea. It's Mac Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just started paying attention to his music after that. And, you know, I absolutely dig that. And I think that, you know, I mean, it's obviously a tragedy what happened to him, but, you know, he became one of my favorites. Jay is always going to be one of my favorites. I mean, I'm an older guy, so it kind of just goes with that, you know?
Yeah. I like all the old school stuff. I'm not too into the new guys because you can't even understand what they're saying half the time.
I could not sound like more of an old guy when I try to talk about the new guys, you know, like that's what I rely on Peter Rosenberg for, like educate me, you know, fill me in on what's good and what's working these days. And, you know, Pete's amazing.
Yeah.
Everything he does with that stuff. Mm-hmm.
I want to take it back to the beginning. What was it that made you want to get into being a radio host? What inspired you? And also, who was that guy that you listened to growing up that inspired you? Like some people look at you, that's my guy who I listen to on the radio. That's who I want to be. Who was that guy for you? And just to start, or you want to be a radio host?
Well, like I never thought, like in high school, junior high, anything. Like I was a huge sports fan, but I never considered it remotely, never even considered it. And, but, you know, I listened, you know, as in high school, I delivered for a drugstore, mm-hmm. and I drove around all day listening to Mike and the Mad Dog and listening to The Fan and Summers and Salzburg and those guys. But you know, Mike and Chris were obviously my guys when I was listening, but I didn't know until I went to college, and I went to small school in upstate New York, named Hobart, and it's D3. And, you know, they don't have a sports broadcasting program. They had a radio station. Mm-hmm. And so one day, my freshman year, this kid lived on my floor named Josh Lytle comes up to me and he's like, look, you know, I know you know a lot about sports, you know a lot about football. And I'm like, yeah, a decent amount. I had played junior high, but I obviously knew it. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, the color commentator on the football broadcast just got, tossed off. Apparently he was a former player and he was a senior and somebody, like, he was completely drunk and obnoxious at this bar downtown. Right. And he's standing at the bar and he's just being, he's just being that guy. And so somebody behind him just decides, you know what, enough of this. And they go up and they pull his pants down. They pantsed him like he had like sweat. And he just turns around and punches the first person he sees. And it's an off-duty cop. So that's not bad luck. That's just dumb luck.
Yeah.
and so needless to say, he was asked to not return to the broadcast and they needed somebody kind of quick. Mm-hmm. And they actually found somebody else, but they got me involved as a sideline reporter. And I just fell in love with it. I absolutely fell in love with it. And like, by the time I was into the middle of my freshman year, I was getting to call these basketball games and I couldn't even imagine from that point forward ever doing anything else. You know, it just was amazing. I only did a couple of talk shows here and there and never really thought about that at the time. I thought more about being like, you know, the next Marv Albert, that kind of thing, even though I had this like high pitched squealy voice. Mm. But, and like I said, we didn't have a program for it and it was Division III and nobody really was that interested in sports. So I got a chance to do it. Like if I wanted to do a game, I could just go do it. I don't have to sit and wait in line. Now, granted, I never learned a lot technically, but I learned from just listening to other guys on TV and radio as far as how to do it.
Would you say that college radio really sets you up for the pros?
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
No question. You know, the opportunities that are created and then just the idea of getting better, you know, like, for instance, just getting to do all of those games and the reps of doing it was something that I wouldn't trade for the world. I really wouldn't. And it led me to doing, just to give an idea, right? Like, we had a minor league team in the town. I was in, like, the league that, like, you know, the Staten Island Yankees were in. It was well before them. the New York Penn League, and the college radio station, like nobody carried the games, and they started carrying the games. And so I got an internship with that team, and I started broadcasting baseball games in the summer. And the team moved the next year. They liked me. They brought me back down there. And, you know, like just getting to do games was amazing. But more than anything, like I could go on and I would go and do like music shows. I would go and do like other shows. And it was pretty incredible. Like I will always have a soft spot for 89.7 WEOS in Geneva, New York. You know, that was my station.
And when you're doing play-by-play calls, I also saw that you were doing a variety of sports. I think you did lacrosse too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Did a ton of lacrosse. Like that was the big sport at Hobart. When I was there, which was in the mid 90s, they had won 13 national championships in a row in D3. So that's all anybody cared about in terms of sports. I did lacrosse. I did women's soccer.
Yeah.
I did men's soccer. I did, I don't think I ever did a field hockey. I did women's lacrosse. They were really good too at William Smith College. I did a bunch of, I mean, you name it. Like I just did a lot of different, little bit of baseball, just did a lot of different stuff. And we'd talk about it. Like we'd literally sit there, myself and one or two other people who were interested in this, and would say, all right, hey, baseball's playing on Thursday. Should we do that game? And we'd ask the guy running the station. He's like, yeah, go ahead. Yeah. You know? So that was getting to do a lot of that different stuff was a lot of fun. And like working with ESPN now, I also do a few games and stuff for them a year. And this past year I did a lacrosse game, and it was awesome to get to do on TV between Carolina and Johns Hopkins. And, you know, I'll probably do some more this year.
And now you're living the dream of calling the games at Rutgers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see it. You see the helmet in the background. I see it on the live streams when you're doing the show too. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I absolutely love Rutgers. I'm a Jersey guy.
Yeah.
I grew up here. I think, I don't know if I ever would have found this or have had the opportunities just based on the fact that, like, I just got to step in and do whatever I wanted in college radio up there.
Yeah.
You have to wait. And the way the programs have, like, I don't know if it ever would have occurred to me to try to do the games when I was at Rutgers, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And they have an amazing program with it. But I also, like, when Greg Schiano came in 2000, they were hiring a new radio team, and I got in as a sideline guy and did that for 3 years. And I've been doing play-by-play ever since. And the guy who left was Tom McCarthy, who does the Phillies. He does NFL on CBS. He does a lot of things. You know, there's a lot there. And Tim Pernetti was one of my partners too, and he was amazing. And so I've been doing it for 17 years, and it's, you know, a labor of love, to be sure. Mm-hmm.
And when you began in 1995, you were at the Fan at that time. You also did work with Mike and the Mad Dog, which was a huge show, as you know, from the ESPN documentary, if you were a longtime listener of the Fan. You also did some work with Don Imus, which I'm interested in hearing, as the sports anchor. What was it like working with him? Even though he said some controversial things, but
yeah,
he is an icon in his own right.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. It was, again, incredible opportunity. The thing I... like that was just one that just happened out of nowhere. And I did it for 2 years. And I mean, the exposure you get off that is off the charts. It's absolutely nuts. And for him to give me that chance was pretty special. You know, he wasn't always easy, but you know, a lot of times, you know, that to reach that level of success, a lot of people aren't always easy. That, you know, they understand that they have to fight for themselves in every way. But I just think that, listen, I've told some funny stories about things that happened with him before, but he's, to get a chance to do that was always pretty special, for sure. It wasn't easy getting up at 4 a.m. every day. And I admittedly, it was something that I wasn't great at. It took me completely out of my comfort zone. And I don't know that I was ever a great fit for the show, but that was more about me than it was about them.
Yeah. I remember seeing Imus in the morning on MSNBC, which was crazy because you would never think that you'd see a radio show on that type of platform.
Right. Yeah. And like, that's what really made it just absolutely crazy in terms of what the exposure is that, you know, they'd say to me, all right, listen, hurry up and finish up the sports. We got John McCain coming on. I'm like, what? You know, like the names of people, of heavy hitters in politics that would show up on the show all the time. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. So, and I think MSNBC had a lot to do with that too. Like, there was this now this visual element to it that, I mean, what other radio shows had ever really done that before? You know,
none. Can't think of any.
Yeah, exactly. So I think from that standpoint, it's, you know, it was revolutionary to be sure.
It definitely was. And Imus was just a crazy character, and he passed away last year. And I remember Mike giving him the tribute, which was crazy throughout that whole year last year. It was just insane. But how do you like working from home now?
You know, it's good. It's given me a chance to kind of do that other stuff, to figure out how can I make the show better. And for instance, like the live stream, that was just me thinking, all right, can I add this element to it? And I didn't know much about, you know, live stream software or anything like that. So I just kind of tried to educate myself as best I could with it and learn how to do it, and been able to do it. And it's growing slowly. It's been, you know, it takes some time, obviously, but it's not like I spent an absolute fortune trying to set up to do it. That's the great thing about all of this right now. And what I'm kind of jealous of with you guys being in school, Max, because like all of these kind of online things that you could just start doing on your own, you could just go and do it. Like, that stuff wasn't available when I was doing it. So you get like the same thing I was talking about getting those reps at the radio station. Like, you can get those reps on your own doing this.
Yeah, you can.
I think it's absolutely awesome.
Yeah. Everyone has their own platform.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's great. I really do. I think you can learn by paying attention to what other people are doing, which is what I'm trying to do every day. Like right before, you know, we're talking today, I'm going on Pat McAfee's YouTube page and looking at how he does things and how much success he's had doing all that stuff. It's, you know, you pay attention to who's having a lot of success and how they're doing it. You can learn an awful lot. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
How's it feel to be solo now? Now you have full control of your show, because I've been in co-host situations and, you know, you get someone with a big ego and it's not that great of a show that way, but how's it feel to be solo?
It's different. I personally, I'll always enjoy working with other people more. Mm-hmm. I don't know, this is going to sound strange, but like, there are times, like, we all have self-doubt at times, like, how interesting am I going to be alone on a topic like this, right? Yeah. I loved working with Bart and Maggie. They were phenomenal partners. I mean, yeah. And that's the thing I've always gone into these things with, is partners. You know, we're in this together, you know? And like, that was three people who did not, you know, I knew Maggie a little bit, mm-hmm. but not well. And, you know, I didn't know Bart at all. And so with that in mind, like, you know, we walked in there and we got along as friends, and Bart embraced it all. And you can let Bart be Bart because you know what he's going to bring, and he's amazing at it. And Maggie has such great thoughtful opinions, and she's so funny. And I had the same thing in Philadelphia. I went to Philly for a year when I wanted to get back into radio after I left. I've been working at SNY and TV for a while.
Is that when you worked with Reese?
Yeah, Ike Reese, who played for the Eagles.
Yeah.
And Ike was the same way, like, team, man, team, let's go. Let's, you know, and we, I had so much fun doing it. I have fun doing this too. It's just, it's different. I do enjoy having somebody else to react off of, just in a conversation. I enjoy having conversations more than anything else. And I, like, even in the middle of interviews and stuff, like, I learn, like, all right, Maggie's going to ask a really smart question here about something. maybe I can think of something off of it that I didn't even off the answer or whatever that I didn't even consider. I think you just, you know, I personally have always subscribed to the notion of working on a partnership kind of level, but this has been good too. You're talking about having complete control, like ESPN. They say, go and take some swings, go and do some things, go do what you want to do. And it's been amazing freedom from that standpoint. You know, they really give me a lot of latitude and, you know, they don't have to do that. I never worked for the company before last yes. year. They don't know me at all. So they've been great. They've been absolutely great on that front.
Mm-hmm. And that's amazing because just thinking about it, my time at WSJU Radio, because they're very laid back on the program in there. And I just think about it, you look at a program like Fordham, they're so strict over there at the college radio station. If I went to a strict program, who knows what kind of a show I would have, because I was able to bring in guests, hip hop artists and athletes and different types of people of all walks of life. And thank God that I'm at WSJU Radio because they allowed me to do that.
Listen, everybody's kind of journey is different. You know, how many people have come out of Fordham and been incredibly successful? Look at Michael, look at Mike Breen. I mean,
yeah. Are you kidding me?
I think about a kid like Ryan Rucco. I call him a kid still, and he's like, you know, he's incredibly successful, but in my mind, like I could think about driving up to Rose Hill to go do a game on what was then CSTV is now CBS College Sports or CBS Sports Network. And hearing this, I was listening to the first half of the game as I was driving up there. I was doing the next game. So I was going up to meet the coach after the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to WFUV and I'm thinking, this sounds like a professional broadcast. And it was Ryan. And it was by far, I mean, it was, there are a few guys that are kind of born with that. And so like Ryan was born with it. Iron Eagle was born with it. Yep. Spirit Adidas was born with it. There are a lot of those guys. There are not a lot of those guys, but I think college radio, for those of us like me who weren't born with it, gives you those opportunities. And as far as like strict versus not strict, I subscribe, like I want to learn every which way people do things and I want to figure out what's good for me. And like you figured out, all right, this works really well for me. This is what I want it to be. And this is how I'm going to maximize myself. And I respect that about you, Max. Like, you know what works for you.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I really do. And I was listening to the show the other night, and I know something we have in common, we're both Mets fans, which I'll
be fair about it. I grew up a Mets fan.
Now, yeah.
Here's the thing. Like, when I grew up in the 80s, the Mets, in the early 80s, the Mets sucked.
Yeah, they didn't get good, so.
Yeah, Mookie 86. Wilson was my guy. And then they got really good, and then they traded Mookie in 89, and I, like, swore them off. About it. But I still, listen, like, I still, I got over that, and I still root for the Mets. I still want them to do well. But, like, for whatever reason, that passion of it has kind of went away. But, you know, when I was working at SNY for a long time.
Yep, loudmouths. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, loudmouths. And I did Mets pre and post game for 5 years with Bob Ojeda. And that was amazing. So, like, that brought me back to it. But anyway, you were going to say about the Mets, and I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yeah, I'm starting to agree with what you're saying about Bauer, because Bauer, he had a great year this year. He had, I think, was a 1.73 ERA. Mm-hmm. But if you look at all the other years, last year he had a 4 ERA. The year before that, he had a 2. And then all the other years, it was the 4 ERAs.
Yeah. And look, if you really – and this is not a guy that got into the league 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy that's been around for 6, 7, 8, you know, I think it's 7 full seasons or 6 full seasons.
Something like that.
Obviously, it's 6. He's a free agent. But – I don't trust those guys, especially, I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about an 11 start season against the National League Central and the American League Central.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I don't mean to take anything away from him. He won the Cy Young fair and square above everybody else, but when you've only had one other really good year and the rest have been, why am I going to pay that guy on the level of Gerrit Cole? You know, people say, well, Gerrit Cole wasn't Gerrit Cole. Go look. He's in Pittsburgh. He's putting up ERAs in the mid twos and high twos, and then a couple above three. Like, Gerrit Cole really had one bad year, and that was about it. So, and the other thing too is, I don't need the headache right now.
Yeah,
I don't mind people being colorful characters. I like it, but listen, with everything the Mets have been dealing with here, Sandy's hiring practice with all this stuff, and it obviously hasn't been vetted well enough. And I like Sandy a lot, but I just think that, like, what's the point right now? You know?
Yeah, he's got some controversy around them. I don't. Some people think, because I've talked to Met fans, and they think that he may be on the same level as Mickey Callaway. We don't know because of what he's been doing with sending things to college girls, tweeting at them and criticizing them. Or
I never got the impression that it was anything like what Mickey was doing, but he was like antagonizing a young woman a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, when she was disagreeing with him about something, it was just granted it's a few years ago, but it still shows an immaturity. And I don't mind somebody being outspoken, as long as their outspokenness isn't going to hurt the team when things are not going well. Like, that's what when you look at a guy like that, you need to think about, do I want this guy here when things are not going right? You know, is he going to be the guy whispering to reporters? Is he going to be the guy saying things outwardly negative about the manager or about the team or about the organization? Based on the history, I don't trust him to do the right thing there.
Yeah, he seems like a head case. I remember reading something online. He carved some conspiracy theory into the mound. I did hear about that.
I didn't hear about that one. I got to go look that one up.
I think he put GBD 9/11. George Bush did 9/11. I think he did that. And he carved.
I knew nothing about. Now I got to go Google that, man. Giving me work. I had no idea about that.
Yeah. Jeez. It was something to that extent. And I'm reading now. I was like, oh, we got this guy coming to New York now. That's not going to be good. And I don't want him to mess with that pitcher rotation, because they got a good chemistry going there. I think DeGrom is the number one guy, and they shouldn't mess up that chemistry.
Right. And the other thing is, I would say about it too, is this. Now, granted, it was different ownership, and I think Steve Cohen will end up paying DeGrom basically whatever he wants.
Yeah.
But if you're DeGrom and you're sitting there and you're going to make 20 this year, okay, and the guy who is coming in might make nearly double what I'm making, and he's had 1.5 good seats, like really 40 dominant starts in a career of 210. Like, what am I missing here? And I've done everything right in terms of not being a problem. So I think for DeGrom, that's that would bother me a little bit. And, you know, he has an out after, I think it's after 2022 or three. I mean, I don't remember, but he's got an out in the not too distant future. And I don't want to screw around with that.
Yeah. I want him to be the number one guy. I think he's been consistent with the Mets. Yeah, he is. I want him to continue to be that, because if Bauer comes in here, he's getting all the attention. He'll be opting out for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what's the point? Yeah. I mean, again, if I think DeGrom would be okay with it, if you were talking about, if it was somebody like Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
Like, if you're bringing Gerrit Cole in here and you're going to give him that contract, you know what? Good for him. You know, but DeGrom has fired his agents. He did that last year after he signed the extension, because he knew it was. And not only that, a lot of the money in the extension was deferred until the 2030s, another Wilpon gift that keeps on giving. You know, so like, if you're DeGrom, do I want to stay and get all that money down the line, or do I want to go and get as much money as I can right now? You know, like, I need him to know how much I love him, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it would, and I don't pretend to know Jacob DeGrom at all personally, but if it were me, I think it's human nature that it would sneak into your mind of like, wait a second, this guy's getting this off of one third of a good season? Like, are you kidding me?
I was very angry with the Mets, because I remember it was a late night. It was on ESPN a couple of weeks ago. The news broke that George Springer signed with the Toronto Blue Jays. And I was upset at that, because they need a center fielder.
They do. I would have personally signed Springer. I did not think it was going to be two huge guys this offseason.
Yeah.
From the early indications, they were going to do some things, but and they were going to get at least one big guy, but I didn't think it was going to be two. And look, they're better. They have improved, but I would have rather have seen them spend the money in free agency. And it's not a knock on Lindor. I think he's going to be tremendous here. Yeah. But if you sign them Springer, and then you have the depth of keeping Jimenez and Rosario and having Nimmo on the bench as kind of a swing guy and a fourth outfielder, like, that's such an aspect of the Mets that I think has gone so overlooked in the last 10, 12 years, the depth, man. I mean, yep. Look at some, go remember some of the names of guys that were like, you know, the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th position players. They're ridiculous what some of the names were. You need quality depth. And I think, like, if you had Jimenez starting at shortstop every day, which I think you could have lived with, you know, because I think he would have ended up, he could end up being a poor man's Lindor, you know, where he may not put up those same numbers, but I think he'll be really, really good defensively. And I think he can put up some good offensive.
Yeah, and I agree about Springer. They should have gotten him. Brad Hand, I was disappointed about, and I heard that it was because they couldn't guarantee him the closing position. And I think they should have gave it to him, in my opinion, because Edwin Diaz, I don't want to see him close another game for the Mets.
Yeah, I don't blame you. talk about the gift that keeps on giving. I mean,
I don't know what they see in that guy. I really don't. They think he's going to change. They think he's going to go back to his old form.
Here's what you're going to see, okay? They may not sit there and say, he's definitively going to be our guy. They may keep it a little bit more open when you get to it, but they're going to take, you know, their new people and work with him and try to fix it. But you're not going to see them so undyingly tied to him as you would with Brody, because they didn't make this trade. This wasn't their deal, you know? So there's no need for Sandy to hang in on a guy that hasn't had it the last couple of years. And even admitted one point, he didn't know if he was right for New York. Like, that one was one that scared the daylights out of me that I think really kind of escaped a lot of people when he said it.
Yeah. I hope the Mets, I don't know. Do you think they should get Jackie Bradley Jr.?
You know, I was reading an article this morning, like, I'm not spending $50 million on Jackie.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. I mean, if we're talking about a shorter term deal, but offensively, like, all right, he's great defensively. He's great. Offensively, he's
not that good.
No. And that's why Springer was so ideal. He may only play center for 2 years, but at the same time, like, that's two pretty good years, and he's still a really good offensive player.
Yeah, they really struck out on George Springer. I was upset when that happened because they just traded for Lindor. It made all the sense in the world. And then I thought of this, and people were like, you'll never be able to prove that. You had the headline with Jared Porter out there. Yeah. Could that have been? But who knows?
I don't think that played as much of a role in it. I really don't. I think that considering Sandy's there and has been in charge, I think the plans have kind of been in place for a while you know, plans A, B, and C about what they wanted to try to do. And I'm sure Sandy wanted, I'm not going to sit here and say that Sandy wanted total control of everything. I don't think he's a control freak by any stretch, but I think that, like, they had a general sense of what was going to work for them. And when the Lindor thing presented itself, hey, give him credit. They rolled the dice on it. They went after it, and hopefully they'll be able to sign him to an extension. There's no denying the player that he is. He's not going to be, you know, Roberto Alomar and Carlos Baerga. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, no. that's definitely not going to happen. Yeah. I mean, it's a new controversy every week. Every week now it's the Mickey Callaway news. You had Cohen, the owner, going through this stocks issue with GameStop. Mm-hmm. It doesn't end for this team.
It's like I said at the time, but when it got official and the team sale went through, you just took a big sigh of relief. know, but at the same time, like, I was hoping a lot of those problems had left the building, but not quite.
Not really.
I'm not going to even say that yet. I think there are lessons for Cohen to learn. Listen, he's an incredibly smart guy.
Yeah.
But he's never had to deal with the public on this level before.
Yeah.
You know, he's always been, people know of him and people in the financial world certainly know him.
Yep.
When you are that smart, you think you outsmart everybody on every level because nobody's telling you otherwise. So I think with that being the case, he's learned a lesson here. And I'm confident that he'll learn from it moving forward. But like, for instance, if you're him the other day, I don't even love the idea that you put out a statement like this, you know, the Mickey Callaway thing. This never would have happened under my ownership. Well, hang on a second. Your financial firm had these issues too. So maybe just dial that back a little bit.
Yeah, because he's going through his own controversy. He deleted his Twitter because of it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, and listen, I know fans loved having the interaction with him, but for him, that is a no win. You do not win. Yeah. Yeah, like the guy, it's like picking a fight with a sports writer or somebody on the radio. Like, they have always got the microphone. They have always bought the ink by the barrel, man. They're always going to have the last word.
They are. I hope the Mets finish this free agency out strong. I'm curious to see what they do. I think they're going to get Bauer, even though I may be leery about wanting him now. But we'll see what happens. I'm curious because you're also a Steeler fan. How do you feel about Ben Roethlisberger restructuring his contract and staying? Because I look at the last game like this. I was watching the last game. I get that he threw four interceptions. He also had four touchdowns, and he threw for 501 yards. Mm-hmm. And he could have brought them back. The problem was in that game, you know, he threw the four interceptions. I get it. That defense just couldn't stop the Browns that second half. They couldn't.
No, I think it's true. I think they couldn't stop the Browns and they weren't good in that respect, but I'm a guy that's, listen, as much as I loved him when they drafted him, then he had his issues with the Colorado thing the bar thing. And like, it just, I didn't want to root for him after that. But from what I've seen this past year and a half or so, like, I hope that they are seriously entertaining drafting a quarterback if they can get one that they like or signing one that they like as well. Like, I would have loved to have seen Matthew Stafford. Personally, I'm ready to move on from Ben, but his cap number this year is $41 million, and that can't be anywhere near that if he really truly wants to play this year. Like, it just has to be – that number has to drop so considerably. And when I mean that, I mean by like at least 50%, because it just can't afford to do it. And I don't know how much is left in the tank. You know, I'd rather be a year early than a year late. And look at what's happened with all these other guys. You know, all right, he may move on and have success somewhere else. I don't think he's Brady, but I think he may move on. And I'm going to have to live with that because I need my organization to move forward. That's kind of how I feel about it. Mm-hmm.
Who's your favorite Steeler of all time?
John Stallworth, probably, and also Rod Woodson. I loved Rod Woodson as a corner. You know, I would say more recently, well, Hines Ward is always going to be
amazing.
I mean, he's top two or three. John Stallworth is a guy that, like, back in the day, really got me loving them because – like, Lynn Swann got all of the pub, but he was
Super Bowl
just
catch against the Cowboys.
Yeah, he was like John Taylor to Jerry Rice kind of thing, you know? Yeah. I loved him. I have a framed jersey of his somewhere downstairs in my house, but that Chris Russo gave me 1 year for Christmas, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very cool. I'd say probably Hines Ward, you know? Like, I got to go, I became a Steeler fan like right after they won all those championships in the 70s.
Yeah, with Terry.
They didn't win again until 2006.
Yep.
Or, you know, like I didn't have a, you know, I had so many heartbreaking losses. So when I got to see them win in 2006, I got to be there with one of my buddies And a couple of years later, I got to take my brother Jim, who's a big Steeler fan. That's like why I became a Steeler fan.
Mm-hmm.
I got to take him to the Super Bowl when they beat the Cardinals. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. At least you've seen Super Bowl wins. I haven't even seen one as a Jet fan.
I know. Listen, nothing will ever match the pain. I understand.
Yeah, no, it's completely horrible. I heard what you said on your show. You think the Jets should roll with Darnold if they don't trade for Watson. And to be honest, I'm not that big of a Sam fan. I say it on my show. I never liked Sam. I didn't like him at USC. He had the fumbling issues in college. Mm-hmm. And I've had Ira from Staten Island on my show, and we talked about it. He can't read the field. Darnold cannot read the field at all.
Yeah. And I think the problem, I agree with everything you're saying. Like, yeah. I am not sold on him at all.
Yeah.
But I've seen Fields play in person a few times, and I've watched him a lot. I really, really, really like him.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's one of those guys that a lot of talent evaluators seem to be very split on. He's going to be a first round pick. It's just how high.
Yeah.
And then I saw Zach Wilson. I did the bowl game, the Boca Raton Bowl, but that was like, that's against a Central Florida team that has zero defense whatsoever. And he made some unbelievably special throws. But I also, I'd be hesitant. So I guess my point is this. If I have the choice right now, if I'm not getting Watson, and that would be my first preference, I would trade three first-round picks for Watson. That's kind of where my line is right now. And I can't go much beyond that. But if I'm not getting Watson, I am moving to the point where, all right, we can take this year knowing no matter who the quarterback is this coming year, the Jets are not winning big.
Yeah, no.
Not about this coming year. Nope. Okay. So with that in mind, I can go get better in free agency. I can take my draft picks and get better. I can give Sam one last shot. And if that's not it, then maybe I don't know what next year's quarterbacks look like. I don't know but now that we're seeing more and more in terms of these big time guys moving around, you don't know what'll happen next year and who's going to be unhappy.
I think they should draft a quarterback, but at the same time, I agree with you. Three picks for Watson, I would definitely go with that. Then I heard Mike Tannenbaum say it's going to take four. If it's going to take four, that's no deal for me. I think what the Jets should do is trade the first pick this year and the two picks next year. But because of the first pick at the end of this round, I really like Etienne out of Clemson.
Yeah. Very good player. Travis Etienne. Yep. And the other guy too, you could talk about is Najee Harris.
Yeah. From Alabama.
Yeah. If you're looking at running backs, that's something to do. My guess is if they were to be able to get him for three first round picks, it would be the two this year. And then it would be the higher of the two next year, likely the Jets pick, likely the Jets pick. But what I'm really confused about is I hear different things about whether or not he wants to be here.
Yeah, I've been reading those reports, and supposedly that was his top spot like last week, but now it's changed all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't know if it's changed or if reports were wrong. I mean, that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
But, and it's not the fault of the reporter. You know, you're told one thing by a person, by somebody who might be in the know, but they might not be in the know as much as you think. So, I'm a little bit conflicted on if he doesn't want to be here, but he's thinking like about, like Ralph Facchiano had today that like anywhere but Houston. I got like five or six teams in competition truly to try to get them. If I'm the Jets, Joe Douglas, I fully believe in. I really do. He was a big part down in Philly when I was there of building that team. If I'm Joe, I've done so much to position myself moving forward with the cap, with the picks, with everything that I don't want to just hand that all away. And there is, if we truly are going to look at this, objectively, there is really a lack of talent on this roster.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, it is immense. And you need to go and find as much talent as you possibly can and get better and hit on these picks and spend the money wisely. Because otherwise this is, you know, it's going to be stuck in it. And if you go and you trade those picks for Watson, you have to understand that that's also not about winning right now. It's about the long term.
Yeah. The thing that scares me about the Watson thing is too, is that not only are you losing your draft capital, you're losing cap space.
Yeah, but not a lot. It's not going to kill you right away. In the first year, it's only $10 million,
which
for a quarterback of his caliber is not ridiculous.
Yeah.
Beyond that, it's in the mid-30s.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, by the time that you get to the middle of that contract, that's going to be more than reasonable for franchise quarterbacks. It's going to be up in the 40s and low 50s, I think, by some point.
Yeah, it's I'm curious to see what they do. I hope they pull the trigger on that. I really do. I hope they get Watson, because then you finally have the franchise quarterback that you've been waiting for since Namath.
Yeah, and you need him. I mean, look, they haven't had it. However they get it, I don't care.
Yeah.
But you know what he is. You know what Watson is. And it is not often, frankly, it's never, that a quarterback of his ability and what he's already done becomes available at 25 years old in a trade.
Yeah.
It never happens. So that's why you really have to look long and hard at it. But it'll be the defining moment of Joe Douglas's tenure here, for sure.
It will be. And something that makes sense for trading for him as well is that I don't think the Jets have great scouts. They're not great at drafting. You look at back at all the drafts that they've had, they really don't have that one player that's really solidified himself and become that star for the Jets. Jamal Adams, he was the closest thing to it. Quinnen Williams could be. We're still waiting. Mekhi Becton, we're still waiting. But Jamal Adams, he just opened his mouth and ran his mouth until they shipped him out of here to Seattle.
Yeah, but I think look at, again, you want to look at the history, okay, but look at what Douglas did last year and look at what the draft picks look like right now. I mean, you feel pretty good about Mekhi Becton.
Yeah.
You feel pretty good about Denzel Mims. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good receiver. Ashton Davis, maybe, you know, we'll see, but they had some other guys who were contributors this year. I felt pretty good about the draft this year. So, you know, again, I'm going to trust in Joe a little bit on that.
Yeah. I want to switch over. Well, actually, before I get into the basketball, I'm kind of curious about the situation with the Dolphins, because you have Tua there. You just drafted Tua Tagovailoa, and they want to dump him right away for Watson. I get it. Watson's the proven guy. But Tua, even though he didn't play well against Buffalo, he had 7-2. When he was put in there by the Dolphins, he was 7-2.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he had a decent season. He was coming off a hip injury and – and
I think it's college. I think it's just that. If it's Watson, they'll get involved. If it's anything else, they're not looking for a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's simply that. Because again, that guy doesn't become available very often. And that takes the Dolphins not only over the top in the division, but all of a sudden they're Super Bowl contenders.
Yeah.
They truly are, because Brian Flores is a really good coach. They've done a great job. And I think from that standpoint, you have to look at him and say, Deshaun Watson immediately gives us a chance to win a championship. And he does. So that's why I think they would look at it. I don't think otherwise they would.
Yeah. I would take Tua. I don't want Sam here anymore. I would definitely take Tua.
Yeah. I think though, if you're the Texans and you believe in Tua.
Yeah. You take him.
That package above all else, because you'd get your number three pick overall back, and you'd probably get at least another number one, if not a couple of number twos in addition to.
Yeah. Everyone knows, you know, that you do, as you said before, with the Mets, you'll root for them. You'll root for them, but you're a Steeler fan. Who is your basketball team for people that don't know?
You know, I really don't have one. I mean, I, you know, back in the day, living in Jersey, 1 year, 2 years, really, I bought like partial Nets season tickets. I went to some games there. But I don't really have a true team. Like, I kind of enjoy watching it objectively. I want the Knicks to do well, because there's no getting around that when the Knicks are good, it's an incredible scene. It's absolutely amazing. Yep. And you're too young to have really seen it, but the mid-90s Knicks were, and even early 2000 when you know when they went to the finals against the Spurs, like that was something special. It really was. That the building was rocking every night. The city was all about them. It was, oh, it was great. And it's hard to believe that they've had, what, 150 win season in 20 years?
2013. Like I constantly live in that year. And I'm so happy to see Mike Woodson back on the bench.
I was kind of thinking that same thing as I was watching last night, you know, like, oh, there's Woody. All right.
Yeah.
Right there. You know, but they, I like the way that, you know, I like the fact that they're defending. I'm very high on Thibodeau as a coach.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Knicks fans have been so in the desert for so long that they want to drink the sand and think it's tequila. You know, when they see anything that's great, like, look, I get it. You haven't seen them win. They're not that talented. That's the thing that they're run into. That's the biggest problem. But at 10 and 13, I mean, you would have signed for that in a minute before the season started. So I understand the excitement there. What I love the most, though, is not the defensive end right now with what they're doing. I love the fact that you're seeing a guy like Barrett really develop.
He really is. He was shaky because you saw the inconsistency. He's finally being consistent now, and it's interesting to see. If they get top in the development, he's scaring me a little bit because they're not giving enough minutes. But when they're giving them the minutes, there really is nothing there. If they can
it's not scaring me yet, though. I love the top and pick. And again, with Thibodeau, it's earn the minutes, defend, learn everything about it. And I think Toppin will be a good player. You know, Quickly is obviously doing some really good things. That's been solid so far. He will hit a rookie wall that people have to realize that will come probably sometime in March, I would say. But listen, there's nothing to be anything but excited about the future. And look at what's going on in Dallas. Like, you may end up having two lottery picks this year.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be awesome. And not that anything's a given.
Yeah, we're never going to get the first. That's never going to happen again. Thank God for Patrick Ewing, but that's never going to happen again.
I was so hoping for Zion. Zion here was amazing. But the one thing I'd say is, like, I look at a guy like Kevin Knox and, like, I know he's not 22 yet, but maybe time to give up.
Yeah. Frank Ntilikina too. These picks, Phil Jackson really – he really fumbled this organization.
He didn't really help you out with Ntilikina, that's for sure. He got Porzingis right, but even then, you know, Porzingis has been hurt so much that it's
doesn't even matter now, and he's gone anyway. So it's like,
and you've got the picks for it, so hopefully you can make up for that if you get the chance this year.
Yeah, I think the Knicks. I think Randall should be an All-Star this year, the way he's been playing. I mean,
yeah, he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it. I don't think he's a starter, but he's done everything right. But I think, watch, I'm not convinced that he'll be a Nick at the end of the year. Like, I could absolutely.
That's what scares me, because I want him to be.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I really, because you saw it. You see it in the games now. He takes over these games.
He does. But they need better. The best way to put it is, they need better players than Julius Randle eventually.
Yeah.
So if that means that you're going to get more in return on capital on Julius Randle, then that's what he's there for. You know, the fact that he has played so well in what Thibodeau's trying to do this year, it has fitted so well, I think bodes nothing but great for him and for the Knicks in potential return for him. Mm-hmm.
I hope he stays, though. I know that what you said, you get more back for him. I hope he stays because I want that guy. I miss Melo being on the court. I want that guy that really takes over on the Knicks games. And
oh, God, Melo. Come on, Melo. Melo. Never a more overrated player than Carmelo Anthony. And I know you love having a guy who's a star and a guy who can shoot and all that. Melo did exactly what I expected him to do. He got the money from the Knicks, and as soon as he wasn't happy, force your way out. Exactly what he was going to do.
I loved him, though, when he came in. I'll never forget it. His first game in the Garden, how crazy that was.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely – it was crazy. It was. That was pretty much the highlight.
Yeah. But my favorite player on the Knicks was J.R. Smith. When he was Sixth Man of the Year, I love J.R. Smith.
J.R. had a great run, had a really, really good run that year. Yeah, I can see that. Like, he's J.R. is nothing if not entertaining, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they had a great team. I love Tyson Chandler. I was angry when they didn't keep him. I thought he was really the heart and soul of that team.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, we're so much further down the road now that you got to be thinking younger, talent. That's what you got to be thinking about. And I think they have the right people in place to do that right now.
Do you think Mitchell Robinson will be that guy, that starting center for them for years to come?
Listen, Mitchell Robinson's never going to be Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No, but I think he's more than a serviceable. That's not even the way I should put it. I think, like, Mitchell Robinson, to me, his high end is occasionally being a borderline all-star. Mm-hmm. But that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I think he can, yeah. It wouldn't keep me from making a deal for a big player if I have him involved.
Yeah.
But I'd also be very careful right now. Like, if Bradley Beal is truly available, like, I don't know what the Knicks would have to give up for him. And it's kind of a similar situation to the Jets. Do I want to go do that for Beal right now, even though he's still young and in his prime? I don't know about that.
Yeah. The Knicks, I feel as though the Knicks just need that one star. They need that. I think they do still need that center that's really going to take over. I'm not satisfied with Mitchell Robinson for some reason. I've seen the foul trouble that he's gotten into in the past and just different things. I'm just not 100% sold on him. But I think an all-star player, a great center, and a three-point shooter. They really need a three-point shooter. Alec Burks is shaky to me.
Yeah, no, they need shooting, period. You know, they absolutely need shooting in the worst way. And what does that say about Kevin Knox right now? I mean, that's the reason the guy, they drafted him, is because he could be an elite shooter. And
He's not Steve Novak.
If he can't get on the court, that's a problem.
Yeah, he's definitely not Steve Novak. That's the type of player we need, though, someone that can shoot.
Yeah, you need somebody who can shoot, but you need the two stars at least to really be a big time competitor.
You do. Yeah. You really do. And who do you think's winning the Super Bowl? I know this is pre-recorded. It's going to play after the Super Bowl, but who do you think's going to win the Super Bowl?
I think I have the Bucks 34-30. I've watched the Chiefs this year a lot and they're great, obviously. I don't know if they're the same team as last year. And I always have trouble going against Brady. The Giants were able to do it a couple of times.
The Eagles did it once.
But, you know, it's not like Brady didn't go out there and light them up. It was really one play, a strip sack by Brandon Graham, that got it for the Eagles, you know. So I'm going to go 34-30 with the Bucks. Mm-hmm. So.
I, as a Jet fan, I'll never root for Brady, so I'm hoping the Chiefs win.
I'm not saying I'm rooting for him.
Yeah,
I'm not going to win.
Yeah.
No, what I'm rooting for is my box numbers. That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah, that's how I'm feeling. But Mahomes and Kelce, when they get on a roll, they're unstoppable.
They are. And Mahomes is amazing. He's absolutely amazing.
And the Jets passed on him, of course. And I talked with this about Ira. All because they drafted Hackenberg, they thought there may have been something there. They didn't take the quarterback in that draft.
I tell you what, that's a tough one. Christian Hackenberg. Mike McCagden, what are you doing? I mean, I just think that, you're always going to have guys that you're going to look back at like that. But there are a lot of teams. There are 9 other teams, right? Was he taking 10th, I think? 10th or 11th? There are 9 other teams that are looking at that like, we screwed that up. You know, I was having this discussion the other day. I'll leave you with this. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were the Buffalo Bills, and that was the team that the Chiefs made the deal with to move up from 27 to 10. If you were the Bills today, knowing that out of the trade, you didn't get Josh Allen out of the trade, but you ended up with Josh Allen the next year. And then you also got Tremaine Edmonds. And you got Tre'Davious White. Would you make that trade again? I think I probably would. I think the Bills are actually, even though Mahomes has come along so quickly, I think the Bills are actually set up pretty good where they could look at it and not be sick to their stomachs that they made that trade.
I think you pulled the trigger on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you still would. Well, it's kind of one of those things, Max, where, you know, you got to look at the overall picture and where you're headed. I think the Bills are headed good places, and Godspeed to the Jets, man. They're coming. They're coming.
I hope so. I thought it was going to be in 2009, 2010. It didn't happen in 2015.
It was close, though. It was, listen, you got to the championship games. It was close, and then it fizzled out.
Yeah. So out of the three teams, you got the Knicks, the Mets, and Jets. Of course, I'm not that big into hockey. Baseball and football, basketball are my three main sports. What team, if they won in New York, would the city just erupt, you think? Would it be the Knicks?
I think the city would be at its peak if it was the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Followed by the Jets, followed by the Mets. The Jets, just because of the 50 years,
yeah,
you know, since they've been there. And, but I think if the Knicks are 50 years too, you know, since winning a championship. And, but I think, yeah, I mean, it's a Yankee town.
Yeah.
And I know you hate to hear that.
Yeah.
it's a Knicks town. I mean, just quickly, like, think about the fact that you have three of the biggest stars in the sport in Brooklyn, and the Nets are a much bigger story out of New York than they are in New York.
Yeah.
I talked about the Nets last night. I've talked about them a few times. Like I don't get a lot of calls about the Nets.
Because it's a Knicks town.
Yes, exactly. People care more about the Knicks.
Thank you.
And the fact that they're playing a little bit more. Now, the ratings may be better for the Nets right now, but in terms of passionate fans, it's not even close. When the Nets were in New Jersey and they were going to finals against the Lakers and the Spurs, they had a couple of finals games that weren't sold out.
Yeah.
And that's absurd. And it's not like they were playing like random teams. They're playing Shaq, Kobe, and the Lakers, and they're playing Tim Duncan and the Spurs. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I think it'd be amazing if the Knicks won. But
yeah.
Listen, man, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you. I've had a blast here. This is pretty cool.
Thank you, Chris Carlin. I appreciate it. I really do. Max, I appreciate you coming on the show here today. I tune into your show and every time I can on ESPN radio I'll say right now, the fan is going downhill since certain radio hosts have retired and left.
Now listen, man, rising tide lifts all boats. It's all good. You know? So it's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, hopefully we keep doing well and things are good, but I really appreciate it, man. Thank you for the kind words and thanks for having me and thanks for your patience in getting this done.
Oh, no problem. And you know, good luck to your future. We'll love to have you back anytime if you want to come back on the show. And
hit me up. We'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Chris Carlin, thank you. Tell them where they can follow you on Instagram and Twitter and all that. So everyone
on Instagram at that guy Carlin and on Twitter at Chris Carlin. By all means, come on over there because everybody needs to see more of me.
Yeah. And make sure you call in the show and tune in 7 p.m. Absolutely. On ESPN.
7 to 10 every night during the week.
Yep. That's appreciate right. It. All right, Chris Carlin, I want you to take care. Stay safe. I hope the Steelers get better. And we'll see. We'll see.
Thanks.
All right, Chris Carlin, take care. Stay safe and stay healthy.
All right, you too. Thanks. Yep.